My name's Jen Yuchin.
And I'm R.E. Fox.
And we're New Gaming News, a bi-weekly podcast and newsletter focused on the esports and gambling industry.
League of Legends, they're doing one of them is not really innovative. So League of Legends adds in-game brand banners for broadcasts. So pretty much if you're watching a competitive tournament for League of Legends, you'll see in-map sponsors, much like in a traditional sporting event, how you see like the banners on the sides of like the baseball field or whatever. You're going to be able to see banners of actual sponsors inside of League of Legends. Only the viewers though, not the participants, not the players. And something they're also doing that, like, I just want to talk about them both at the same time is the LES and the LCS is doing reward drops during live matches. Mm-hmm. So if you watch it on their personal platform, which is watch.lolesports.com platform, you get in-game prizes for watching it. So I think they're trying to get away from, like, the basic live stream platforms like Twitch, and they're trying to incentivize their own platform.
Really? So you're saying that League of Legends is going to have their own platform, so their own broadcasting network. It's kind of like, it sounds like the Yankees network?
Yeah, I think it's going to kind of be like that. And we talked about that, I think, last episode, where a lot of sports, like traditional sports, have their own platform where you watch it, and then esports is kind of like all free in one platform. So we're beginning to see a little bit of a transition here where they're getting bigger rewards for watching on the native platform.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting though, because, you know, we can't compare streaming platform, and, you know, we call them streaming platforms, but someone from an older generation would call them a broadcasting network.
Yeah.
I try to translate what a streaming platform means in, you know, a boomer language, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a broadcasting network. And so what you're looking at, I think, is a pull away from Twitch, because I think that the publishers feel they don't want to be, you know, publishers, as we always have mentioned on the show, is that, like, they have all the power. They have a lot of power. And now I think they're trying to flex their muscles a little more and say, the publishers have a lot of power. We've always agreed that they've had a lot of power. Now they're going to be flexing their muscles more to create a platform for their own game.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like, you know, it makes sense because they have the ability to do that. But what will that translate into from the perspective of the viewer? A League of Legends audience is going to tune into the League of Legends streaming platform, so to speak.
Yeah, only if you're a player of the game, because only a player would care about drops and things like that.
Right. But here's the other thing that in this article talked about was all of these drops inside the game, mm-hmm. and in the map. I mean, I've seen League of Legends tournaments, and when you're viewing the map, it doesn't look like they have in the picture of the article, like it's three-dimensional. You're really seeing a 2D image.
Yeah.
You know? So how, I don't know exactly how, unless they're freezing or doing replays, you know, of the virtual map, is it going to be, have these like MasterCard drops or American Express or something like that in the banners? You know, during the actual play for League of Legends, I don't know if you can do anything like that because the game's not built that way, or unless I'm wrong. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I feel like it'll be really, I guess, yeah, because it's not really a great way to showcase what these banners look like. But they do also say on this broadcast service that if you get like the pro version, you can watch from the player's camera. But it's still it's still top down. It's not like it's front facing like that. So it will appear pretty small.
Exactly. And so the other thing I'm also understanding and from this move and this pivot is that because of COVID, they're not having, you know, tournaments in arenas, and because they can't market to the people in the arena or or there's no way to advertise in the arena, which would then be on a stream, they have to now put it in game. They have to put it in game. But League of Legends has a little bit more of a challenge there because of its 2D, 2D way of viewing it. And I think that's the, you know, that's the challenge, and the, and now they're trying to give, I guess they may be giving the viewers a different view. And, you know, you mentioned that, and then in the next article it talks about the introduction of reward drops for people viewing. This is all basically, as I saw in the other article, it's a basically it's a gauging mechanism to see eyes and viewership and getting data with Nielsen to try to sell more advertising.
Yeah,
I think that's in a different way. I mean, they also have to, it has to be pivoted in some ways because of, you know, the pandemic.
How so?
Well, because of the pandemic, we can't, they can't have live, you know, in-house tournaments, brick-and-mortar tournaments. And I think that pivoting in the, you know, pivoting to have it more visual online is
definitely... Oh, I understand.
Right, right.
Because
they have to have, they have to put it in-game. Otherwise, the advertise, they're not going to get any advertising.
Yeah, like just throwing it on the stream for... like a 5-second window doesn't cut it, or giving a little segment, it has to be there the whole time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you can't flood the screen with like little boxes of.
Well, you know, it depends. Right, and it depends on the game you're talking about. I mean, it's a lot easier to do, you know, advertising product placement. Perfect example, Fortnite. Fortnite has been doing an amazing job in product placement. An amazing job in, you know, even selling tickets to virtual concerts.
Fortnite does a really good job with incorporating their partnerships into the game because they do it in a way of like skins and in-game experiences. And did you, I think we talked about this last time too, that they dedicated like their own department to virtual music experiences. So like the two concerts that they had, they're going to keep having things like that.
Right, and at
and
a time like
now. Why wouldn't you want that?
Right, and at a time like now, it's perfect. And even, why wouldn't you want that?
Even for example, like, I love Post Malone on a personal note, but his concert tickets are like $200. Like, no offense, Post Malone, but I'm not paying $200 to see you live. But if I could drop into a Fortnite game where you had this, like, really cool free in-game experience, that's what I would go to.
So how do you, like, and also during a pandemic, you can't go to an actual concert. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the music industry has pretty much been killed with the fact that nobody can go to these, nobody can go to concerts. That was one of the
major revenue stream,
That they can't even, can't get that back.
Because they don't make money on selling their music. They make money on tours and brand deals.
Right, right, exactly.
Much like esports.
Yeah, well, much like esports, and you know, as esports, as we know, has been catapulted and advanced in over 5 years. You know, I always say it's about 5 years into the future because of the pandemic. You know, so much is happening now on all of the ways. You know, with the betting, and because there's no regular sports, we spoke about this before. In China, there's according to the Esports Observer, there was evidence that there was match fixing.
The organization Newbie was accused of match fixing, and apparently they were like bullied into like not admitting it, but kind of just accepting that they lost because of match fixing. So now Newbie is asking for actual evidence, which I think this is an important step into just kind of like the outside understanding match fixing and like how it can be tracked and what can be done. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this all plays out and how that will really help the betting and esports industry going forward.
There's been a lot of articles recently, or a lot of connecting with the ESIC, esports esport integrity coalition, by Sports Radar, and I know that Sports Radar recently has just got, they're buying statistics from publishers of the players and then reselling them to companies that now have full on eSport books, which is like companies like William Hill, which never had an eSport book, now basically, you know, FanDuel, DraftKings.
Yeah.
And I read recently, there was an article that came out in the New York Times today, actually a really big one, about eSports and about the wagering in regards to eSports. And what I read was that they've, eSports is now basically, the numbers have increased by 40 to 50% from where eSports wagering was prior to last year. This year, it's on mark to like double in wagering. So they're talking like something like $12 billion or something like that in esports wagering this year. So,
well, that brings us to the next article, which is Esports Entertainment Group eyes gambling expansion with New Jersey. They have the intent of obtaining gambling license throughout the United States, starting with New Jersey, and really like leaning into it this year. So, even over Nevada, New Jersey is going to be the esports front runner in esports gambling.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, New Jersey definitely needs a lift from somebody. And I actually was, I had a beer with Grant Johnson, who's the CEO of the Esports Entertainment Group. He's been doing this. He basically told me he tried to get this company three times off the ground, and eventually now he's finally gotten the venture capital for it. Actually, it's now publicly traded. He got stock for it, and he closed on that deal right before COVID. It was really, you know, full throttle. So he kind of closed right before, you know, things just went south economically for the country. And now he's in a position where I think he's going to make a lot more deals in helping the state of New Jersey really get more of a grip on esports wagering, because they're lacking. Although they were the front runners and leaders, and they were trying to do what they could, you know, Nevada was actually the ones that actually had esports wagering before New Jersey. A lot of people don't, but they did. Although it was very small amounts, and it was very slow to happen. Nevada has picked up steam and sort of passed New Jersey in regards to esports wagering, because New Jersey had stymied themselves with all kinds of stipulations about not being able to bet on an esports wagering if there was somebody that was 18 or younger that was playing on the pro teams. And now they're changing it to like, you know, if 50% of the players are 18 or younger, then you can't wager on that team or something like that. So there were all these sort of like litigious problems that New Jersey had that kind of kept them from advancing any quicker. But they're not worried. I mean, they've advanced on a lot of other things besides besides actual esports wagering. They're one of the three states, I think, that have online casino gaming, so that's been keeping them alive.
What's the third state?
What's that?
What are the three states?
I think it's New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and I believe the third one is Michigan, but I'm not sure. There was a great article in the New York Times today about esports wagering and how that has had a great impact in, or actually helped, the wagering in the, it's kind of taken up the slack where sports wagering couldn't, because there's no sports going on.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, what was the last article I think we had? Or was that after the one?
Well, just article of note. We've been talking about Betway almost every week because they've been really a big supporter of Blast, right, and Dota 2. So just they're still in that kind of space. But the last one is just talking. It's, I guess, an opinion by David Fenlon saying that there are hidden gems around the fringes of esports investors. And what I got from most of it is just that everything is everything that you thought was overvalued, like the Call of Duty franchise slots at 25 million and everything like that, do have more value, but mostly really for like technology companies and services.
You mean as far as what who would invest in
who in should being... be investing into esports? So if you're like a technology front running company, that's the type of company that should be running partnerships and ads with esports.
Well, you know,
and that's who should be investing into it.
You know, yeah, and I know that we've said this before, but if you look statistically, it's probably more now. But the actual people and fans and the esports part of the video gaming industry is only about 10%. It's probably about 15% of the entire video gaming world. Mm. And I think that there's and one of the reasons why I think we really can't compare esports to conventional sports is because esports was birthed from the entertainment world. It was basically, or came from video gaming, which was entertainment. And conventional sports came from the world of competitive play.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is that that's one of the reasons why I say you can never compare the two, because esports at its core is really entertainment more than it is competitive. Mm. And so overall, the video gaming ecosystem is an entertainment industry. And I feel that, you know, with that being said, what we find in esports is when you talk about what's on the fringe of esports, it's the whole rest of that 90% of the video gaming world that people aren't really seeing. You know, when you talk to an investor and you talk to them about video gaming, the first thing they'll think about is esports.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to the video gaming industry than esports. There's indie games, there's explorer games, there's games like Skyrim that we've talked about, Arkham City.
So how can an investor get involved in that?
I think from an investment perspective, I'm trying to plug myself, but I mean, my company Gamacon is actually building that type of experience. So that experience is, yes, we have esports with the World Esports Tour, but we also are going to have all the other fringing elements that encompass the entire video gaming entertainment package.
That's really what you kind of grew your brand on, not only indie gaming, but just just gaming in general.
Right, but I mean it's all the aspects. It's everything. It's music of people that play music. It's the streamers. It's the influencers. It's the actual teams. It's everything around the entire culture of video gaming. So there's ways to get involved in that, and you know, or of course, at the highest levels and what's sexiest is probably the esports side of things. But there's so much more to get involved in. There's publishing, there's what's the next esports game? What's the next big game?
Mm-hmm.
So this is we're not just talking about the birth of esports in my mind. We're talking about an entire entertainment phenomenon. It's like the start of Hollywood with movies. It is much more than what we're seeing right now. There's so much growth here on every level in every place that's what Gamacon is saying. We're saying as a grassroots, we're touching everything. We're going to be representing all of those people. Because as I said on the show before, I have three older sons. I have an 18-year-old, I have a 21-year-old, and I have a 25-year-old. The 25-year-old played Smash for his college team. The 21-year-old only plays Arkham City and Skyrim. And the 18-year-old is also a Skyrim player. Do you consider them to be competitive gamers?
No.
No. They just immerse themselves and escape in the virtual worlds of, you know, those types of games. But the older one, so that's one out of three. If you took that as a microcosm, that makes sense because it's the majority of those three are not gamers. Like when I say gamers, I mean people who are competitively playing video games. That's not their, it's not their bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're, but you know, but the older one it is, and it's interesting to know.
Do they watch esports?
No, they don't. They're really not big fans of watching it either. They'll watch their brother play.
Yeah.
Who plays Smash, but they're not. You know, they're not big fans of actual watching other people play. Right. I mean, it's all about that, you know, and again, we don't all look the same. We don't all act the same. We all, like, have different tastes and different needs. So that's exactly what we're trying to process is say, here's a platform. GameCon is a platform. It's going to be online, and it's also going to be an actual convention that we're going to have that is going to meet everyone's needs. Yeah, there's going to be tournaments, big tournaments for big money and all that stuff. And it's going to have esports and that's going to be super sexy. But it's also going to have the surrounding elements to video gaming as well, because we can't leave that out. That's the other 90%.
Yes.
How do you build an industry on only 10%? Well, you can't. You really, really need the entire world community, not just one entity of that entire world community.
Mm.
That's, you know, everything that we could cover today. But if I, as I said earlier, if anyone gets a chance to look at the article from the New York Times today, it's a very interesting article on wagering in esports. And any investors that are interested should also take a look at that as well.